Welcome to 15 Minutes with Charlie. I'm your host, Charlie Meacham. I want to help you communicate more effectively, and I think that the use of anecdotes can really help. Explore this with me as I share anecdotes from my book, Total Anecdotal, and ask my guests to react to them with respect to their own career and experience. Today's podcast features David Faraday. David played professional golf on both the PGA and European tours. More recently, he has hosted a highly regarded TV show on the Golf Channel, which features one-on-one interviews with notable figures in the golf industry. This series on the Golf Channel has become very popular. David's profound knowledge of golf and his incredible wit make for a show unlike any other. Listen here for my 15 minutes with David.
The first anecdote that I want to ask your reaction to appears on page 26 of my book under the heading of Adaptability and Flexibility. And the anecdote's designed to show how important flexibility and adaptability to sort of an unexpected situation can help. I was privileged to serve for more than 25 years on the board of the J.M. Smucker Company. Paul Smucker was the CEO and driving force throughout the years, an extraordinary man in many ways. One year during the Q&A at an annual meeting, a woman got up, noted that she and Paul had known one another since they were in grade school, and she always loved the company and everything it stood for. But she said, "There's one little thing, Paul. All your jams and jellies are put up in such large jars. We older people, especially those of us living alone, don't need such big containers. Couldn't you put up your jams and jellies in itty-bitty jars?" Well, the audience laughed and applauded, and I thought, wow, how's Paul going to handle this one? It was a good question. It was asked by a lovely lady and an old school friend. Well, Paul smiled and said, "Mabel, you're right. We've known one another for many years, and I respect your judgment. It's a very good question that you've asked. Let me try to answer it this way. We could indeed, and maybe should, put up our jams and jellies in itty-bitty jars. But Mabel, if we did, then we'd have to pay itty-bitty dividends." Well, the audience roared, Mabel smiled, and the meeting went on. Your thoughts, David, on the importance of adaptability and flexibility?
Well, in my business, Charlie, the first part of my career, playing golf for a living, adaptability is incredibly important. I mean, you're faced with situations where, often what you've been trying isn't working, so you've got to adapt your game or your swing to compensate for the problems that you're having. One thing that I would point out about that anecdote is, I've got to the stage where, I'm 60 now, and my hands aren't what they used to be. I've had hand surgery on my right hand. I really need to have it on the left. And my problem with itty-bitty jars is I can't get the lid off.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, Paul was a unique man, literally built the Smucker Company from a very small company into a large one. And he was a master at this kind of thing. So thank you for that. The next anecdote is on page 52 of the book under the heading of ego. I'm sure in your world, David, you have run across many gigantic egos, and you've run across many people with claims to major egos who have learned to manage them. But the one-line anecdote goes like this. Just remember, the cemeteries are filled with indispensable people. So I'd like your thoughts.
Well, there's one that my father used to tell me, and that was, as soon as you think you've got the answer, someone will change the question. And it's kind of similar, I suppose. But ego is something Frank Turkinian, the great producer, used to say, that talent isn't talent without ego. But,
right.
I think you have to keep your own ego in check. If you want to, communicate properly and because part of communication is being likable.
Right.
The most likable people are often, you know, the best communicators. For me, you know, communication is self-deprecation is a very important part of it. If you make people comfortable because of your own weakness, I tell people all the time that I ask questions from a position of weakness.
That
has always worked for me.
I've always said that sense of humor is critical, but never at the expense of other people. That your humor should always be either self-deprecating or the overall human condition, but never at the expense of another. And obviously you agree with that.
Well, I do, and it reminds me also of, I don't go to church very often because I don't like to be surrounded by sinners. And I went one of the last times I went to church was to listen to the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Yes.
Who's like the Episcopalian Pope, if you like. He's the head of the Church of England.
Right.
And he said one thing that sort of resonated with me and has done over the years. He said, and I'll attempt to recreate his accent, he said, "People with no sense of humor have no sense of proportion and shouldn't be put in charge of anything." And that sort of stuck with me over the years.
I could not agree more. I've said this many times. I can't tell you how many times intense business situations, or for that matter, personal situations, I've seen the spell broken by a good laugh. It never totally solves the problem, but it makes it a hell of a lot easier to solve. So,
you're right. And I think in a way, a sense of humor is a self-defense. Also, when you're faced with a situation that's filled with pressure or, anxiety or something like that. I come from a place where I grew up in kind of an urban warfare environment in the Troubles in the 50s, 60s, and 70s
right. In
Northern Ireland. And I think one of the reasons that people from Northern Ireland are so funny is that you have to find, it's absolutely compulsory in a way, to find humor even in, you see it in Jewish humor and Polish bread humor.
Oh, yeah.
Place where there is suffering, you'll see a sense of humor unlike anything else because it's the last defense, I think, of the human soul at times.
You're so right. And one of my favorite stand-up comedians was Henny Youngman. A lot of his lines are well known. One that I ran across the other day that I absolutely love. He said, "You know what it means when you come home at night and you're tired, the lady meets you at the door with a drink and a kiss. You know what that means? It means you're in the wrong house." He was a master.
Yeah, he was. And I love stand-up comedians, and Henny Youngman was kind of an older version of Rodney Dangerfield, if you like.
That's true, exactly.
No respect.
Exactly right. Okay, well, the next anecdote, speaking of funny people, is a quote from Yogi Berra. It comes on page 59 of the book under the heading of Forecasting the Future. And it goes like this: "The world will miss the great Yogi Berra. His contributions to the English language are legendary. Consider this quote as it pertains to forecasting the future. Quote, if you don't know where you're going, you're liable to end up somewhere else." End quote. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I was lucky enough to have met Yogi on several occasions over the years.
Right.
And what an extraordinary man. He was so delightful to be around. He had that mischievous twinkle in his eye. And the great part about Yogi also is a lot of his quotes and things that he said were purely accidental.
Right.
There's a great beauty naivety, especially in our children. We kind of miss the days when they were young enough to be naive. There's an endearing quality to it. And I think Yogi kept that for his whole life and was so charming and lovable because of it.
Indeed he was. And his quotes and his image, and God knows his talent, will endure for a very long time.
Yeah, people forget, too, that Yogi Berra was part of the D-Day invasion.
I didn't know that. I actually did not know that until I read it in Europe. Yeah. The next anecdote comes on page 68 of the book under the heading of Hard Work. It goes like this. A man prayed and asked God to help him win the lottery. Every day he renewed his prayer and finally said, God, won't you please help me win the lottery? To his absolute amazement, the skies darkened, lightning flashed, and a strong, deep voice said, would you at least buy a ticket? So often I think we forget how important hard work is to success. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it is. There's no way to succeed without some kind of hard work, whether it's thinking or, you know, physical or emotional, whatever way you want to think about it. You know, you've got to put the effort in if you're going to reap the rewards. And just at this point, Charlie, I love the book. I really do. And I hope you don't mind, but I do a stand-up tour around the country myself. You know, it's a two-hour show in theaters. And I might steal a couple of these lines. I will give you credit for it.
I would be honored if you did that. And I'd also love to know your schedule, because I'd like to plug into those somehow.
Oh, well, if you go to FahertyOffTour.com, you can find out the dates and the venues for that. FahertyOffTour.com.
Okay, good. I'll do that. This next anecdote appears on page 88 of the book and is under the heading of passion. It's an excerpt from a speech by Neil Simon, the great playwright. And I've loved this since I ran across it some years ago. He said to a graduating class, whatever path you follow from the moment you take off those long black gowns, do it as though Gershwin had written music to underscore your every move. Romantic and idealistic, yes, but I can't think of anything worthwhile in life that was achieved without a great deal of desire to achieve it. Don't listen to those who say it's not done that way. Maybe it's not, but maybe you will. Don't listen to those who say you're taking too big a chance. If he didn't take a big chance, Michelangelo would have painted the Sistine floor and would certainly have been rubbed out by today. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, this one really resonated with me because, apart from anything else, I didn't graduate, not even from high school. But oddly enough, my high school invited me back several years ago to do a commencement speech like this, and they didn't realize that I hadn't graduated from that high school. Which was the first thing that I pointed out.
Right.
Kids love the teachers not so much. But for me, the subject of passion, and because I didn't do well at school, I couldn't pass an exam. I was a classic attention deficit disorder child.
Yeah.
Although when I went to school, they called that stupid.
Right. Right.
Really, there was no pill for it. But I was 17 years old and sitting in a geography class when they were teaching us about the average rainfall in Western Samoa. And I thought, well, this is going to be useful in later life. If I want to be a Western Samoan weather forecaster. That was the day that I left school. I just turned 17 and I had a 5 handicap. And I lied about my handicap in order to be able to turn professional. And if I hadn't had a passion for the game,
right?
If I hadn't, I'm not saying that I believed in myself, particularly much, but, you know, I believed in the people around me that could, you know, support me and help me to at least leave, you know, or make a short-term goal, which was to be able to make some money and you know, make a living out of playing golf.
And indeed you did. The next anecdote actually goes to the point of the people surrounding you. And it came from a conversation that I had with Joe Namath. I got to know Joe because we were members of the same golf club down in South Florida. And we were talking one day about a variety of things. And I said, hey, who do you think were the two or three best quarterbacks in the history of football? And his answer was not at all what I expected. I thought he would immediately list names like Unitas, Montana, Graham. Instead, he said, you know, Charlie, it's impossible to answer that question because you'd have to understand and evaluate the strength of the offensive line that protected the quarterback, as well as the skill and number of his receivers. In other words, the quarterback might have a record that either enhanced or did not do justice to his ability simply because of those who surrounded and supported him. This makes ranking by skill levels completely unfair. And the anecdote closes by saying, this, by the way, is a pretty good lesson for life in general, not just for ranking quarterbacks. You are never better than the people that surround and support you. This comes on page 120 of the book and under the heading of What's Really Important. I'd like your reaction to that.
Well, first, you know, just thinking about Joe makes me smile.
Yeah, right.
He is another one of those incredibly engaging personalities. And, of course, you know, he was surrounded by a fantastic offensive line. And you know, I think you'd have to put Joe Montana up there in that top
couple
of quarterbacks. As little as I know about, you know, American football, I think I know that much, you know, from having watched old footage and having spoken to him and spoken to those, you know, who played with him, the likes of, you know, Joe Montana,
right.
You know, people like that. Just, you know, being around positive people and, you know, accepting help, and I think being aware of the fact that you need to be around, you know, successful people, because successful people do the things that unsuccessful people don't want to do.
Right.
And, you know, they want the responsibility that comes with success. And, you know, you have to want to be in a place where you know you're going to be uncomfortable. But having said that, you know, you're going to be more comfortable if you're surrounded with people who have your best interests at heart. And I think part of it is actually being able to identify those people who have your best interests at heart.
You're absolutely right. And I've always said, David, that in my mind, there are three kinds of leadership. One is by intimidation, where a person follows a leader because he's terrified of not. The second is leadership by bribery, which is to pay the person enough to keep them around even though they're miserable. But the third, and to me the only effective form of leadership, is leadership by example. People follow you because they want you to succeed. They follow you because they care about your success, knowing quite well that that will help in their own success. So I've always felt that the first two forms of leadership, intimidation and bribery, when things really get tough and you turn around to look for your army, there's nobody there. But if they follow you because they really genuinely care about you and want you to succeed, then there are thousands of troops right behind you. So that's my philosophy on leadership. Speaking of sense of humor, let me close with something that you may have seen in some of my writings. But Neil Armstrong was a dear friend of mine, and I'm reminded of him particularly as we come upon the 50th anniversary.
Armstrong is one of thing on the moon with 17 seconds of fuel.
Unbelievable.
He had to make the decision that he was either going to go back to the lunar module or the mothership, or land it, you know, with just enough fuel to be able to take off again. He did it manually without the aid of the computer.
People don't realize that he was one of the world's most successful test pilots before he even entered the space program. And the reason I bring it up is because Neil loved to laugh. This was, most people thought he was dour and removed and isolated, but he was anything but. He, in private, among his friends, he had wonderful sense of humor and loved to laugh. And his favorite joke was a joke that he never finished because he would laugh so hard as the punchline came that he couldn't finish. And I was honored to give a eulogy at his memorial service, and I actually told this story. And it goes like this. These two guys were walking down the street on a very hot, humid day, and the one guy said to the other, they were walking their dogs, by the way, and one guy said to the other, "I'm dying for a beer. I'm so thirsty." And the other guy said, "So am I. What are we going to do?" And he said, "Oh, look, there's a beer parlor right there. There's a saloon." So, well, then, oh, God, there's a sign in the window that says no dogs allowed. Well, the one guy says, "Look, I got an idea. I'm going to go in, and I'm going to tell him if the bartender asks that this is my seeing eye dog. And if it works, and I'm not back out here in 5 minutes, then it's safe for you to come in. It's worth a try." So the guy goes in. Bartender says, "Hey, buddy, can't you read the sign? No dogs allowed." Guy says, "I'm so sorry, sir. I'm blind, and this is my seeing eye dog." And the guy says, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I didn't realize that. Come over here. I'll buy you a beer." So the guy outside thinks this must have worked. So he goes in, and the bartender says, "What's going on today? Sir, there's a sign in the window, no dogs allowed." Well, the guy says, "Oh, I'm so sorry." He says, but I really can't see it. And this is my seeing eye dog." And the bartender says, "Come on, it's a Chihuahua." And the guy says, "What? They gave me a Chihuahua?" Neil would, he'd get just about to the point where he'd say, "What?" They gave, and then he'd start to laugh. And when Neil laughed, he always kind of bounced up and down. And so anyway, sense of humor was important to him. And I completely share your view. This was one of the great heroes, not just of our time, but of any time.
Absolutely. And, you know, it reminds me of an Irish joke, a real short one.
Yeah.
But a fella goes into the supermarket with a Chihuahua on a leash. You know, he said the same thing. "This is my seeing eye dog." And the guy says, "Well, that's all right." And he sort of got the dog hanging on the leash, and he started spinning him around over his head. The fella says to him, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm just taking a look around."
That's terrific. Well, I'll tell you, my friend, this has been absolutely delightful, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time, because I know how busy you are to share this with me. I'm glad you enjoyed the book. It was fun to write. I'm being urged to do another one, and I might. And indeed, I'm being urged to do an audio version, which would be fun too.
So, oh, I think that'd be a great idea. Absolutely. Lovely to talk to you, Charlie. I'm sorry I haven't had the chance to see you in a while. Hopefully our paths will cross soon.
I hope so too. Continued good fortune and good health, and so many thanks, David.
Thank you, Charlie.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining me for today's conversation. If you'd like to listen to more episodes, please visit charliemeacham.com or search for 15 Minutes with Charlie in your podcasting app. And if you're enjoying the show, you should check out my book, Total Anecdotal, a fun guide to help you become a better speaker and writer. Learn more at charliemeacham.com/book. That's charliemeacham.com/book. Or you can acquire the book either through Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Thank you.